Hello, everyone, and welcome back. It's Richard Lanham for Set for Success, where we help you create a roadmap to transform your business, career, or life. As you know, I like to feature businesses or businesses that help other businesses or people that help other people or even the hidden gems in our economy. And I've always loved finding those hidden gems. There's just so many businesses in our economy that have a story, that are successful, but yet nobody's talking about them. And why? But that's not totally what the program is about today. I want to circle back to the expertise, the experience, the been there, done that principle. I think there's so much we can learn from leaders who have worked, paid their dues, and now moved on maybe to another profession. Maybe they've started another company, and they're growing that company, and they're making a contribution to our economy. A profession where helping people succeed is paramount to their own success often means offering training and coaching to make the business world a little bit better place. Their business a better place, their client's business a better place, even one person at a time if need be. There is nothing in the world like helping somebody succeed. When you do that, it's almost like you're implanting a thought, a hope, a dream that they will pay it forward. A concept that was made really popular in a 2000 movie actually called Pay It Forward that was based on a novel, a book by Katherine Ryan Hyde. Set in Las Vegas, it chronicles a 12-year-old boy's launch to a goodwill movement known as, you can guess, Pay It Forward. The lives of the people in the movie are just as real as the lives of everyday life, in your business, in your personal life, in your family life, in the organizations that we hang out at every single day. So I was thinking about that the other day as a profession and who's actually involved in paying it forward to help people in business succeed. Well, to succeed in life for that matter. So I started to take a look around. I figured, well, let's take a look and unearth this journey. Let's kick at the journey and unearth business leaders and professionals who, by the very nature of the service they offer, the person they are, they invest in the success of others. In essence, they pay it forward, which is a perfect fit for a program called Set for Success. So I'm hanging out today with Patrick O'Reilly of Patrick Coaching and Consulting. I sort of tripped on the name of your company there. Is it Patrick? Is that how?
Padraig.
Padraig. Yeah. So, very close. I'm glad you said close. You and I have talked about this previously, Patrick. So let's just start off first with just tell us a little bit about yourself, sort of historically, or if your own personal life and your business journey.
Sure. Well, like you were saying in your intro, I had kind of my own career before starting a business. For about 20 years, I was a senior executive in Ottawa with the federal government. And, worked in numerous roles, pretty senior levels, and was having fun with that. And then along came an opportunity to negotiate a deal for the federal government to create a new national museum outside of Ottawa. And so I became chief federal negotiator to arrange for the Canadian Museum for Human Rights here in Winnipeg. And that, you know, took a couple of years of negotiating and writing legislation and all of that stuff that has to happen for a big project like that. And once we got the deal done and a board named, the board asked if I would act as the CEO of that institution and get the project started while we waited for the Prime Minister to, you know, name a permanent CEO, thinking that would be, you know, weeks,
maybe
a couple months. So I of course, said, yes, I'd love to. I want to see this project really get going. So I came out to Winnipeg and started the project in 2008. And it turned out to be a couple of years before the Prime Minister named someone. So I got to be the CEO for the first few years that the Canadian Museum for Human Rights was being built, being created. The content was being designed. We got to, you know, crisscross the country consulting Canadians on what a museum should look like. Got that going. And then once the CEO, permanent CEO, was named, he asked if I would stay on as COO, the chief operating officer. And so I did.
Okay.
Because I was really loving the project. I was loving the city. I was loving the people involved with it. So I kind of permanently moved out here. About a year later, we went our separate ways. Kind of, I realized it was pretty tough not to be the CEO when you've been the CEO.
CEO, and, yeah, now you're CEO.
You know, I think he probably came to the same realization around the same time. And so when I left, I decided I was staying in Winnipeg. I'm a Westerner originally, grew up in Saskatchewan. So this felt like home. And I was really liking life here. And so, you know, a big change. It was the first time I'd ever kind of left an organization without any plans. Like I said, I'd been a public servant for what felt like forever. And so I really took the opportunity to take a new look at life. I went back and did some graduate training as an executive coach and launched a business here in Winnipeg, coaching other executives.
Yeah, and that's sort of where you've got right now. And hesitating to say the name of your company again, I'm going to have you say it.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
No, go ahead. Say
it. It's called Padraig.
Padraig.
Yeah.
And how's that spelled?
P-A-D-R-A-I-G.
Now, that's a very unique name.
Yeah.
So maybe you could tell us the history of the name of your company a little bit.
Sure.
Yeah.
I'll take a step back and just let you know that, you know, when I launched the company, I was going to call it that. And then I really struggled and thought, you know, I do have a bit of a marketing background. I thought, that is really not the best marketing move in the world, to name a company something that people are hesitant to say
to
out
say,
loud.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I'm doing it to
you
right now.
We're not going
to
get a lot of word of mouth when people don't know how to say it. So I worked with my own coach, actually,
okay,
as I started my business, and kind of came to the conclusion, no, I love this name, and I'll explain why in a moment. I love this name. I'm going to just kind of double down on it. I'm just going to make sure that I take the chance to tell people how to say it. And, what? You know, we send out a blog every couple of weeks, and I often put in there how to pronounce our name.
How to pronounce your name. Okay.
And really, so where it comes from is it is my name in Gaelic. It's
okay.
Patrick.
Okay.
In Gaelic. Yeah. You will find people all over Ireland named Padraig.
Padraig.
And, you know, they roll the R a little more than we are able to here.
Yeah, fair enough. Fair enough.
Yeah. So often people who are golfers say, oh, Patrick Harrington, the golfer. And I'm like, yeah, yeah, I don't know him, but that's right.
Patrick.
Same name.
Okay. So that's actually pretty cool. So your own name in Gaelic, which, I mean, I'm assuming Gaelic is a lost language, so to speak. I mean, you might have some areas of the world that are able to still speak and translate.
Yeah, certainly Ireland still uses it a lot, I guess. Yeah.
Okay.
And then we have a logo that's a Celtic knot to kind of tie in with that same idea. And the idea of that is it's a never-ending loop, right? A Celtic knot is just a constant line. And I like to think of that as knowledge.
Okay.
It's something we're just learning all the time.
So I do want to get into the sort of coaching practice a little bit. Why did you pick to go into coaching after all of that incredible experience that you had in the government sector and I guess to a certain extent the corporate sector?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It's kind of a funny story. I set out to be a consultant, right? Which is kind of the typical move. You leave a business and I'm going to be quote unquote a consultant,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Wasn't entirely sure what I was going to consult on, but I figured I'd be a consultant. And one of the first people who came along, a young fellow I met just after leaving the museum, even before I went and did my graduate work, he knew me. He knew my experience at the museum. He didn't know me personally, but he knew of my career and my work at the museum, and he asked what I was doing. And when I said I was consulting, he said, do you do any coaching? Because I've just been appointed COO of one of the national television networks. And I'm 32 years old. I'm pretty young for that role, and I'm looking for a coach, and I know your background. I think you'd be great. And I said, well, I've coached a lot of employees over the years. And I suppose, you know, if you're willing to pay me my consulting fee, then I could coach you. And so we started out like that. And Winnipeg being Winnipeg, word started getting around. And people said, hey, I hear you're coaching.
Yeah.
And so I started doing more and more work. And I realized at that point, I don't know if I'm doing this right. I don't know if this is really a thing. And of course, it is really a thing. And it's different than mentoring or consulting. But I realized I was loving it. So I went back to Royal Roads, did the graduate program in coaching out there. And then just realized I've got a dive into this wholeheartedly. It was changing my life.
So Patrick, I love life-changing stories and how our journey ends up and sort of where we thought we were going to go and then where we do end up. But we're going to take a short break and we'll come back. Maybe we'll dive a bit more in this. This is Richard Lamb for Set for Success. We'll be right back. Hello, everyone. Welcome back. I'm hanging out with Patrick O'Reilly, and Patrick is an executive coach. And Patrick, just before the break, we were talking a little bit about your story, how you, I'm always going to say fell into it, right? I mean,
yeah.
You started a journey as a consultant, but then you, somewhere along the way, opportunities presented itself, right?
Yep, exactly.
And you ended up becoming an executive coach. You were speaking a little bit about the education of an executive coach just right at the tail end of our last segment. Could you maybe talk about that a little bit more? Because there's always a possibility people will want to know a bit more about, well, how do you become educated to become an executive coach?
Well, and thank you for asking that. I think it's a really important question because coaching is not a regulated industry. You don't have to have a particular degree to call yourself a coach. And so there are a lot of folks who call themselves a coach just based on having some life experience, which might be okay. But our firm, all of the coaches that work with me are certified coaches. We've been certified by something called the International Coach Federation. And that means we all have a graduate degree. It happens we all have the same one from Royal Roads because that's where I went and I know the program. I really believe in it. So it's about a 9-month graduate level program and helps you become an executive coach, at least start being one. And then, you know, it's continuous education from that point on.
Sure, sure. Yeah, so there are professional associations related to this. And I think the coaching association has been around, I'm just going to guess, 10 years?
Yeah, yeah. Coaching became a thing.
Yeah.
Probably 12 to 15 years ago. And,
yes.
And a few years in, I think those coaches who were, you know, really well-trained or training themselves and making this a real profession realized we need some sort of body to start recognizing this and regulating it, making sure that people are good if they're going to call themselves a coach.
Yeah, and that's fair enough. I would have to concur with that if you wish. And then the education. I'm actually familiar with the Royal Roads education program. Oh, I'm going to just trip on my words today. Just we're having the coffee here and it's just what's going to happen. Common challenges. I mean, you must see working with different clients, different organizations. What are some of the common challenges that you actually see?
Sure. There's probably a couple of big ones for sure. When we get calls from the more senior folks in an organization, the CEO, the COO, that sort of thing, they're often calling to say, I need some help getting my team of leaders working together.
Okay. So that concept of rowing in the same direction.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly. I need to know how I can be a better leader for them to help them get there. So that involves both helping the CEO and helping the team, doing some teamwork. And then probably the other one of the bigger ones we get is, you know, I'll just use the analogy of, I've been a widget maker for, you know, 10 years. And frankly, I was a really good widget maker. And my company saw that too. And now they've made me manager of the widget makers. And I don't make widgets anymore. Now I got to manage all these people. And I've actually never had any experience with that, or I've never learned how to do that. And I thought it would be the same as widget making, and it's not.
It's not. It's
and I need some help.
It's the same thing. It's interesting you would say that because I went through that 15, 20 years ago in my career because I grew my career on the technology side of the equation. So successful technology professional becomes manager, becomes team leader, senior manager. And it is a totally different skill set.
It really is. And we've noticed it doesn't matter the industry. You know, you could be literally making widgets, but you could also be making public policy in government. You could be selling things to people. Even roles where relationships are important still find it harder to then be the leader of people where relationships are different.
Yeah. So if you had somebody who, in essence, got promoted, right, then very successful at what they do, got promoted, what might be an approach or maybe some of the issues that you might be trying to work with them to resolve?
Mm-hmm. One of the things with executive coaching, the one-on-one executive coaching, is that that's beautiful about it and why it's so successful is it's so customized.
Sure.
Right. So we explore with these leaders, what are they struggling with? What would they like to see happen? Right. When we work together, they'll often say, I want my team to respect me. I want to feel more comfortable in my own shoes. You know, the more we talk, the more the trust gets built. We often hear things like, I don't know if I'm qualified for this role. I'm a little worried that I fooled them in the interview.
And they might find out the truth.
And they might find out the truth, yeah. Right? Then what? I had a great career as a widget maker, and now I'm going to get fired because I shouldn't be in this job.
Wow. Right.
Those are the sort of things we hear.
Those are the sort of things. So then how do you go working? I know it's customized, right? Mm-hmm. But how do you go working through something like this? Because I have that thinking that I've been highly successful in this space here, and that's your comfort zone, right? Or maybe it's your natural space, right? And you can talk a bit about that. And then making that transition up that ladder, so to speak.
Yeah, for sure. That comes with, first of all, that whole idea of what would you like to see? What would success look like? If someone in your job was successful at your job, or if you're looking at others around your company, your peers, and thinking, I wish I could be as good as they are as a leader. So tell me what it is. Like, let's figure out what you are aiming for. And then we'll talk about what's holding you back from that? Where do you think you aren't good at that? Or what skills have you not learned that you think you do need to learn to get there? That sort of thing. So we'll explore that and then work our way through. One of the differences between a coach and a mentor, or a coach and a consultant, is coaches will ask a lot of questions to help you figure out how you're going to do something, as opposed to telling you this is the best way to do it, which can sometimes be a great thing, but sometimes the best way isn't going to work for me.
Yeah.
Right? I just don't feel comfortable doing that. And so that, I guess, ties into another thing we do, is we do behavior profiling as well. So we will work with a client and put them through either a behavior profile or a 360 profile. So we get to learn more about what their natural strengths are, right? You alluded to sometimes it's what you enjoyed, sometimes it's your natural strength.
And what we can do is, I think when we get into talking about natural strengths and then what you move into, we might want to call it fit, if you wish, we can maybe talk about that in the next segment. So why don't we take a short break? This is Richard Land for Set for Success, and we'll be right back. Hello, everyone. Welcome back. I'm hanging out today with Patrick O'Reilly, and Patrick and I are talking a little bit about coaching. Well, actually, we're talking a lot about coaching, business coaching, executive coaching. Maybe we'll put a word around that soon, Patrick. Just before the last break, we were talking a bit about profiling, and I'm a big pro profiler. So I like this whole concept and thinking. So maybe you could describe it a bit to our listeners when you're talking about profiling, what exactly you mean.
Sure. Yeah. And I don't love the word because, you know, nowadays it's got that whole TSA arriving at the airport being profiled.
Yeah. And that's not what we're talking about.
No, not at all. Not at all. So we help our clients individually, or sometimes their whole leadership team, do an online profile with us where they, you know, answer questions that ask them about what they like, whether they don't like, how they behave, that sort of thing. And it's designed to be accurate, right? You can't game the system. It comes out with a profile. We use one called DISC that I know you're familiar with.
I'm familiar with that one.
That really helps people figure out what motivates them and what stresses them in the world, in life. And we always have them answer the questions thinking about their workplace, right? So that's a big one for understanding how you see the world. And why we love that one more than others is it really focuses on then figuring out how other people see the world so that you can adapt to them. And then another profile that we use is one around emotional intelligence, helping people figure out where their strengths are, where they're overdoing some of their emotional intelligence and where they're underperforming. We do that one both as an individual. Someone could take the profile and see, assess themselves. And then we also do it as a 360, where their boss, their peers, their staff also answer how they see this person coming across on all the scales of emotional intelligence. And that's quite enlightening when you begin to realize that in some areas, the rest of the world maybe sees you differently than you think than you see yourself. Yeah.
And I think that's always fascinating when you do those things. I've been through 360 performance reviews, if you wish, 360 profiling throughout my career too. And you mentioned using the DISC, you mentioned using EQ or emotional quote, and we should talk a little bit about that in a moment. But I mean, there's other products out there like Self-Management Pro, Myers-Briggs, I think some people are familiar with. And I do understand there's certain ones that are preferred. In terms of emotional quote, and maybe we should explain that a little bit.
Sure.
Because a lot of times people will hear IQ, EQ, and I know for a while they're popular was this whole concept of CQ. So maybe we can get the distinction between IQ and EQ.
Yeah, good question. IQ, you know, everyone's probably familiar with that. It's your intelligence quotient. It generally, it doesn't change over life, right? You're probably familiar, children are often tested for their IQ. And, you know, there's some debate about how much value you should put on that in a child, but the number doesn't tend to change as we grow older. Whereas EQ is about emotional intelligence, and that is how you read people around you, how you pick up on social cues, and then how you respond to them, and your own awareness of how you're responding to them, right? It involves a bit of mindfulness, being aware that you're having a reaction to something that happened that may not have anything to do with this person you're talking to. It may have happened at lunchtime, and now you're
venting
feeling
on
frustrated
them
and venting on them
maybe,
and whatever.
Sure.
Yeah. And so we do have assessment tools, just like IQ can assess the number. we don't end up with one number for EQ. We end up with a sort of a long list of emotional qualities that people have, and assessing, are you high on that scale? Are you low on that scale? The interesting thing with emotional intelligence, or I think it's interesting anyway, is you can be too high and you can be too low.
Okay.
You want to aim for a nice band in the middle. And as an example, empathy is one of the scales that we measure on emotional intelligence. So you might think, how could I possibly be too empathetic?
Too high,
right?
Yeah, that was my question. You saw it in my face, right?
Exactly.
I can be too high or
too
low, but go ahead.
I know, and I too, when I first did, I thought that, wow, I'd love to be too high on empathy because sometimes I feel like I'm a little low. And in fact, what happens if you're too empathetic, then it becomes very difficult to make a decision because no matter what decision you take, it's going to affect someone maybe not the way they want to be affected, right?
Yeah, it's going to affect the
stakeholder. So imagine being a leader and you have to figure out how you're going to cut costs. If your empathy is off the charts, you're going to have a very hard time deciding that maybe you need to cut one of these positions. And yet a good leader is going to have to make those tough decisions occasionally.
Very difficult decisions to make, yeah.
So there's an example of somebody who's just too high on empathy, then is probably too low on decisiveness.
Okay. So there's sort of this opposite
teeter-totter
type of thing. So then if we go further, and I'm sure it's just the opposite, if you're too low on empathy, mm-hmm. what could be the result of that?
Yeah, then you can be too high in some of the other areas. You'll be seen, or too low in some. Sometimes they correlate together. So if you're too low on empathy, people probably find you distant and cold and taking this aloof sometimes.
Aloof is a good word. Yep.
And so we'll probably see that show up in other scales on the emotional intelligence as well. And that's where, like I said, when we ask people around you what they think versus how you see yourself, some leaders will think, I'm just right on the empathy scale. I'm right in the middle, right? And people around them, maybe their boss and their peers will say, man, you are way, way too high on the empathy scale because you can't make decisions.
Yeah.
Maybe your staff are saying, yeah, he's good on the empathy scale because
he's nice
really
guy.
Nice towards
nice
us,
guy,
right?
Yeah.
And it's not that we don't want you to be nice. We want you to be nice and be effective. And so we'll help our clients figure out how to adjust. And so that's the thing about emotional intelligence. It can change.
Okay.
It can be learned. And so that's where coaching comes in, is we help people in that example, maybe rein in their emotional intelligence a little bit on the empathy scale. Figure out why they're so empathetic and how they can go ahead and make a decision and still care about people. And yet then maybe bring them up a little more on the decisiveness scale, right? Figure out the same thing, how they're going to make those decisions.
Is it sometimes a matter of providing people the tools that they can apply?
Yeah, sometimes it's tools. We call them tips, tricks, tools, sort of thing. That when you're in that situation, try this. When you're in that situation, try that. And sometimes it's just becoming more aware. It's that aha realization, as we just had, like, wow, how can you be too high
on empathy,
right?
Yeah.
Sometimes that's enough for people to think, oh, okay, well, I'm going to rein that in. I'm going to work on that.
Yeah. I sort of understand that because I'm going to put myself on the chopping block here a little bit, but I have a bit of a decisive gene. we'll put it that way. And I think it's sort of predicated that I have a bit of a mathematics, science, music sort of background. So making decisions based on key information is easy. But then you can come across sometimes as not being empathetic enough because you're basing your decisions on facts, right? And you've got to make that difficult decision. So you step in and you do it. That was very revealing.
fair enough. Good for you. And I'll tell you, we're similar in that characteristic. I've tested myself a few times and it confirmed what I thought. And so folks like us who are in that situation where we make decisive, where we make decisions, we're very decisive based on facts and figures. Other people can find us cold-hearted, not caring, too direct, that sort of thing. And so, that's one of the things we do a lot of work with leaders, is helping them realize that the way they see the world isn't necessarily the way other people see the world. And so, I had the great opportunity to do a TEDx talk one time on the golden rule is wrong, right? Treating others the way you would want to be treated is not what you should be doing, particularly as a leader in business. So, you know, sure, you don't want to be punched in the nose. I don't want to be punched in the nose. At that level, it's fine. But at the level of treating other people the way you want to be treated in the workplace, if you're decisive and fact-driven and that sort of thing, one of your employees might be very social and engaging and find that very difficult.
You know what? That's a really good point, because I think we've all been raised with the idea of the golden rule. And maybe that's what we should talk about the next segment. This is Richard Land for Set for Success. We'll be right back. Hello, everyone. Welcome back. I'm hanging out with Patrick O'Reilly. We've been talking about executive coaching, and I threw the word business coaching in and stuff too. And you know what? Before I maybe dive in to what I wanted to say, is there a distinction between business coaching and executive coaching?
I suppose there's distinctions. We consider ourselves business coaches, executive coaches, and leadership coaches.
Okay.
And I tend to gravitate towards the word leadership coaching.
Okay.
I suppose the distinction might be business coaches would probably work with entrepreneurs quite often, whereas as leadership coaches, we tend to work with people who are in larger organizations or mid-sized organizations and leading other people.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we're coaching you around leading people as opposed to coaching you your business.
No, fair enough. Yeah. You mentioned larger organizations, and I do want to go back to this whole idea of the golden rule, but when you're working with clients, what type of clients do you tend to be working with?
We work with people really at any level of leadership, but starting with that, you know, as I was saying earlier in the show, that first level, I've been a widget maker and now I'm leading people and I need some help, right up to the CEOs. We have 9 different coaches at the moment in our firm. And so, you know, different coaches work with different levels, that sort of thing. We work with people in pretty much every industry. Because my background's government, we have quite a few government clients. I'd say half of our clients are provinces and municipalities and that sort of thing. But we also work with, you know, large companies, like one, the largest life insurance company in the U.S. is one of our clients, for example. Some of the banks are our clients.
Okay.
Hospitals, healthcare centers, you name it, universities.
Okay, so that gives a good idea. You know what, I'll do this right now. If somebody want to get in touch with you before we sort of move on to my next question, how would they go about doing this?
Sure. Well, first of all, check out our website. It's padraig.ca, padraig.ca. We have a lot of info there. Toll-free number, 855-818-0600. And I'm an extension 101 or coach at padraig.ca.
There you go. So that's some opportunities. Now, we were talking about the golden rule just before we went on to last segment break. And I love that you said that, because you know what? There's often all times I will even think about it. You know, I learned this in elementary school.
Mm-hmm.
I learned it at home, right? You know, always follow the golden rule.
Mm-hmm.
What the heck is the golden rule?
And the golden rule is, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Treat others the way you want to be treated.
Yeah. And but because people are, based on what you said last segment, people are so unique that doesn't always apply.
Right. It works well in the playground. That's why our moms taught it to us, right?
Oh, yeah. Okay.
If you don't want them hitting you, then you don't hit them, that sort of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
If you don't want to be excluded from their birthday party, you don't exclude them from yours. But as adults, as leaders in the workplace, we need to recognize that the way we see the world, what excites me about the world, what worries me about things, what scares me, is completely different, or could be completely different than the people around me. In particular, in a workplace where, you know, you don't always choose who you're working with. Even if you're the boss, you're hiring them for their skills.
Yeah.
You maybe didn't hire them because you two think alike. In fact, I hope you didn't.
Because that's usually a mistake.
Yeah,
right? Yeah,
exactly.
They think like me.
So you want to be surrounded by people on your leadership team who think differently. And therefore, if you're treating them the way you would want to be treated, if you're very, you know, we were talking before about very decisive and fact-driven, and surely everyone sees the facts here and everyone would come to this conclusion.
And we got to get the job done.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Whereas other people need more time to absorb it, or they want to make sure other people are okay with it and engaged with it, or they want to make it more of a social activity. That's right. Whatever. Some examples come up, but it is very detrimental in the workplace when we don't do that. It really destroys teams.
Okay. So that brings us nicely into maybe the concept of team development and communication, because it sounds to me like a lot of this, even when you're working with somebody one-on-one and you're investing in their success, right? It's really about success of the greater whole.
Yeah, usually. And like I said, because we tend to work more with people who are in organizations, working within a system, we help them make the system better too. And we work with people who lead others. So often when they're working with us, the system they're talking about is the team that reports to them. And because they can be quite senior, that team may all be leaders as well, right? And so, you know, I'm sure every one of us who's ever worked in an outside organization have worked in a situation where teamwork wasn't working well, where there were silos, where people were worried about their own functions, not about the good of the organization, or there was maybe even some backstabbing or some all sorts of politics going on. That's what we help with. Yeah. We help leaders figure out, how do I fix that?
How do you fix that? It's interesting you would use that last one, because I see this one a lot. So I do a lot more strategic planning, and I tell, you know, everybody listens to me knows what I focus in on. But I always see when I'm dealing with a leader, so the president of the company, it seems like they always have that one person on their team who's, I'll call them the technical professional, right? They're in a senior position and they hold everything tight, and there's always this conflict between a team because they won't let go. Is that a common occurrence that you see?
Sure, yeah. There's a few of those, but that's one for sure. And that's why we do teamwork work as well, right? We'll work with the whole team together. And that comes back a little bit to the golden rule and to seeing how different people see the world. And, you know, it sounds a little touchy-feely, but we work on helping leaders be vulnerable with each other on their team.
Yeah.
Right. We do all sorts of exercises around that, so people can start to see how others see the world. And when we do these workshops, people are like, there's literally aha moments.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. They go, oh, my gosh.
Wow. So, like, you really don't see the world that way. You're not trying to be difficult.
Yeah.
You really are just trying to be accurate.
Yeah.
Wow. Because it sure feels like you're trying to be difficult.
Why are you giving me such a hard time?
Then we can have a great conversation about that. And that's where we get emails after the fact saying, oh my God, you've changed my life. You've changed our workplace. And, you know, yeah, it's wonderful.
Those are pretty cool. Yeah. Those are pretty cool moments. I have to admit, I've worked on a few teams like that too. And I've worked with a few clients like that too, where we've done some of this stuff. Mm-hmm. And it's nice to see those aha
moments. Oh, it's fantastic. It's what keeps me going.
There you go. We got what you're connected to, right? So I was just thinking a little bit about teamwork, communications. Are there like a couple of tips you can share with our listeners that might actually help them that they could apply tomorrow into their work environment?
Yeah, you know, I guess that golden rule one is really the one I want to leave people with. Just know that other people aren't seeing the world the same way you are. And that's at a very core level. I don't mean, you know, sort of obvious stuff, but literally what motivates you, what drives you, isn't driving them. In fact, it may be stressing them. And that ties into the comment I just made, is sort of come from a position of goodness. Know that the other person probably isn't trying to be difficult. Now, there are one or two people out there in the world who will prove me wrong on that.
Yeah.
But for the most part, try to change your assumption that in fact, they're just being themselves. They're being natural for how they see the world. And so see if you can figure that out. If you're brave enough, even have a conversation with them about it.
And see if you can figure out what that might be. Wow. What a show we've been having. You know, Patrick, I've always loved this sort of space and talking about coaching and team development and growth. Anything that actually helps individuals, teams, and organizations to be successful, I'm into the conversation. If you had a final thought for our listeners, what would it be?
Final thought would probably be, know that you're worth it. If you're struggling with getting help from a coach or getting someone to come in and work with your team, or you're afraid to ask your company if they would pay for something like this, remind yourself you're worth it, and remind yourself if they've put you where you are, they think you're worth it too.
Right on. Everybody's worth it.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much, Patrick.
Pleasure.
Really enjoy hanging out with you whenever I get the chance. Listeners, I really appreciate when you tune in. Awesome show, great thoughts. If you have a question, a thought, or even an idea for a guest, just send me an email at richard@setforsuccess.ca. That's richard@setforsuccess.ca. And do remember to do your best, invest in the success of others, and make your journey count.